Okay, good morning, everyone. First, I would like to thank the organizers for having invited me here. One always feels slightly more intelligent walking to the Isaac Newton Institute in the morning, so I hope I will prove that it is true. And so I will be addressing various issues around stochastic volatility, fitting the volatility surface, and these are topics, obviously, which are very much on the mind of practitioners in London, Frankfurt, New York, and so on. And I will present a number of different results. Most of this has been joint work with different co-authors, and I apologize to all the names I should mention on the way that I will possibly not mention. I just want to say that Carol Alexander has some review paper on the topic of volatility surface. I have not read the paper, but heard a talk of hers at Imperial College. And so I will share with you some views, and you are very welcome to stop me at any point in time. So basically, what is the story? We have heard about the volatility smile in a first stage, then about the volatility surface in a second stage. And as you may know, practitioners are becoming more and more demanding in terms of what the model should be doing for them. Okay, so the smile, namely fixing the maturity, then going across maturities, so we get the surface. And then when I go to local levy, I will mention another feature that practitioners would like our models to capture. Okay. So in principle, I have all kinds of underlyings in mind, but for practical matters, most of the empirical work has been conducted in the framework of equity as the underlying. Okay, and here, so I mentioned a few ways of looking at the volatility smile or surface that I will discuss. You know, Bruno Dupierre is going to be here later this week. You know about local vol, and I will recall that briefly. Then you know that we can create stochastic volatility either as a separate state variable, such as in Heston 1993, or we can create stochastic volatility, for instance, in the CEV model that I will discuss later. Okay, with my co-authors, Madan and Yo, we have been proposing for 5 or 6 years the use of levy processors, in principle even pure jump levy processors, to represent the dynamics of the stock price and look at the volatility smile and surface. And we added later on stochastic vol in the levy processors, as I will show. And lastly, we went to a so-called local levy approach, which is a kind of extension of this one, which was conducted, as you know, in the framework of continuous processes. Okay, so this is the agenda, and I promised the chairman I could stop any minute he would signal. So let me start on this. So we proposed a few years ago this example of pure jump levy process, namely CGMY, not because we were four authors, but because we have four parameters. And as you know, in finance 50 years ago, we started with two parameters, mean and variance. This was Markowitz frontier and so on. And then we became more intelligent, and today we are dealing with four parameters. We need also to look at skewness and kurtosis. So in this model, one of the nice properties we like is the fact that, in fact, the four parameters do relate in a very simple manner to the four moments. So under the physical measure, this is the levy density, and obviously we know that the market does not fall in the same manner it goes up. So consequently, obviously, we do not want to have exactly the same expression for the levy density for positive and negative X. So we have the four parameters. I have been working on catastrophe options and so on, so I'm the bad news here. I am the G in the negative moves. So in any case, this is the levy density. It has a number of properties I do not have the time to discuss in detail. I just want to mention that the parameter Y is one of the is the most important, Y for Markyor, and this parameter capture what we call the fine structure of the process, what we call in particular infinite activity. Namely, we like to impose on this Levy density to have an integral over the real line to be infinite, not finite, but infinite, because we want the possibility of moves of all kinds. As you know, the Levy density relates to the expectation of the number of moves of size x in a time unit interval. And so in order to have all kinds of possible moves, we like to have the situation of so-called infinite activity that we obtain in particular in this case. Okay, finite variation, you know what it is, a complete monotonicity, namely if we are on the side of positive values of x, we want to have fewer big jumps than small jumps. That's the monotonicity, and we want it to be very monotone. Okay, that's the story of complete monotonicity. So we calibrated this model on a number of U.S. stocks and U.S. indexes as well. We benefited from the Morgan Stanley database that Dilip Madan has access to. And then, obviously, we want to go in a second stage to option prices. So remaining under the physical measure, I just want to mention something briefly. We believe that, in fact, prices move by jumps. Sometimes the jumps are big. Most of the time they are small. In any case, the Levy density is going to allow for jumps of all sizes. And another thing I want to mention on the side, it is not the purpose of my talk today, but it was discussed yesterday afternoon. For those of you who are interested in electricity, I do not believe, even though I have a vested interest in this CGMY model, I do not believe that for the fine representation of trajectory, CGMY would be valid. This is a graph of electricity prices in the United States. Anywhere in electricity, we have so-called spikes. Prices go up very high, but then they go down. We are here in the situation of, let's say, $40 per megawatt hour. We may go $1,000 per megawatt hour, as we do in the small house where I spend my summers in Massachusetts, but then it goes down with exactly roughly the same magnitude, okay? So it is not clear to me that at least in terms of the fine representation of trajectories that the CGMY process would do a great job. For a kind of value-at-risk approach, it may, but for the representation of this spice, it may not do the job. So this was a side comment. I will return to my focus, which is more equity prices and option prices written on stocks. Okay, so here I mentioned that, as you know, of course, because of the Levy-Kinchin formula, we are able to handle the so-called CGMY process. So we have here the characteristic function. And we also looked at the possibility of adding a diffusion term, okay, in order to be able to talk to our friends in the literature and so on. We want to see what happens when we add a diffusion term, which obviously is not harmful for the characteristic function. Okay, so in this paper, we provided all kinds of results, in particular the fact that when you look at a market index, such as the Dow Jones, this eta is non-significant. Namely, today, the market moves as a whole. A piece of good news on General Motors, bad news or whatever, would take the market down, or the whole market would go up. The eta becomes significant in the case of single names. Okay, so in any case, this happens under the physical measure, and then I announced that I wanted to look at option prices, and when we go to the risk-neutral process, we make the assumption that the structure is kept, but the four parameters are changed. Okay, so we make the assumption that under P and under Q, we have the same structure, but a different set of parameters. And obviously, I am going to be assuming market completeness, namely that I have enough options with respect to strikes and maturities in order to have a unique probability measure under which we will be able to compute option prices and calibrate the model. Okay, and again, I go briefly here to the use of the fast Fourier transform in order to handle option pricing in the framework of a Levy process. So here, that's my expression for the underlying stock price. Returning to yesterday afternoon, here my little r is my interest rate, and my little q is a dividend payment in the case of a dividend-paying stock. My little q may be the convenience yield in the case of commodity. And as we know, this convenience yield, depending on the period, may be positive or negative. So in any case, regarding the mathematics, this does not matter. And this is a risk-neutral drift, as you know. Okay, so in any case, we compute the Fourier transform of the call price under this expression. And to ensure nice properties of this function gamma, we incorporate this coefficient in order to have nice convergence for this function and for the inversion. It was a device I had introduced in 1995 with Eidelund when we inverted the Laplace transform for the option prices we had computed 10 years ago with Mark Yor. So in any case, this is the expression of the Fourier transform, and then we invert the Fourier transform, which is possible, and we go to the calibration. So let me just mention, so I do not have the time to go into the details of the inversion. I just want to mention that we are able to compute this function gamma, which was on my previous slide here. And putting these two things together, we are able to recover the call price here. Okay, so that's where we are. And that's what we are going to be using in order to go to the market, look at option prices, and derive the four parameters under the Q measure. So doing so, what happens is the following. So we have done that in the framework of U.S. data, but we have done that as well in the framework of Europe. So I am here in Europe. As you know, the very liquid index on which we have options written is the Eurostock 50. So on this chart, I have the construction of the implied volatility surface without anything. Just take option prices with respect to maturities and strikes and do inverse Black-Scholes and derive the volatility. So now in the next picture, I'm doing the following. I'm taking my risk-neutral CGMY and I am trying to find my parameters in order to calibrate the whole surface. But I decide in a first stage to focus on the short maturity, give a higher importance to short-dated options, and doing so, we find that we do not do too well in terms of long maturity options. And the same story happens if we look at the Dow Jones and at options written on the Dow Jones. Okay, and so I can do the same exercise, and now take my volatility surface and decide to focus on long maturity options, and then we are not doing too well in terms of short maturities. And in principle, I have another figure where we try to do both at the same time, and it is not too great. So we sit down and we say to ourselves, if we are looking at a given maturity, we are extremely satisfied by the results provided by the risk-neutral CGMY. but across strikes and maturities, it is not good enough. And by the way, we are doing, this is research in progress, we are doing the same for interest rates now. So this is a volatility surface in the case of caps on the, we are in Europe here, and we are looking at the LIBOR at the underlying, and the same thing. If we try to calibrate one given maturity, we do a good job, namely something like this. When we go across strikes and maturities for the volatility surface on interest rates, we are not doing as well. So consequently, we decide to do something else. We say the following. Levy processors obviously are great because they have a mathematical structure, because they provide us with a Levy-Kinchin formula, because they allow us to use the Fourier transform for option prices. However, by nature, a levy process has independent stationary increments, and this may not be appropriate when we look at market data or when we look at the literature provided by many authors, and here are some names. These authors exhibit autocorrelation in returns, clustering of volatility, and so on. So we say we want to destroy some rigidity in the levy process, and in order to destroy this rigidity, we decide to incorporate stochastic vol in the levy process. So my point is the following. As we know, when we have a jump process, the existence of jumps by itself creates stochastic volatility, creates random changes in the volatility. So here we are introducing a second effect, namely introducing stochastic vol in its own right in the levy process. Okay. And in order to do that, we use a device that I have been mentioning for a long time now, namely that a time change can create stochastic volatility in any process. So we take CGMY, and instead of computing CGMY at a date little t, we are going to compute CGMY at a random time of t, at a random function of t, and this time change is going to create the stochastic volatility on top of the volatility created by the jumps. Okay, as we know, the time change must be increasing. Obviously, we never go back to the past. So consequently, the rate of a time change must be positive. Point number one. Point number two, since we want to create this volatility clustering and so on, we are going to incorporate this property in the time change. So that's why we proposed to use the following representation for the time change. Namely, we look at the famous square root, Heston, CIR, whatever you want to call it, Bessel, process, which is here, and we take the integral of this little y. I'm sorry, this capital Y has nothing to do with the previous one. So in any case, the transaction clock is defined as the integral of this little y, the little y being driven by a positive process, the square root process. Okay, so I mentioned the motivation. Capital Y is increasing in time almost surely, and capital Y, because of this expression, is going to create some kind of clustering and autocorrelation of returns, clustering of volatility. And lastly, and we have in this conference in particular Chris Rogers with another expert on Bessel processors. So in any case, the good news here is that we know the characteristic function of this little y. And obviously, this is going to be important when we go to calibrate the volatility surface to have a closed form expression for the characteristic function. So now, this is the proposed process. Z is equal to CGMY computed at time y of small t. And there is an assumption that you may dispute. We make the assumption that X and Y are independent. The driving process, CGMY, is independent from the transaction clock described by this expression. Okay, and obviously the benefit is that we are able to derive an expression for the characteristic function and for the Fourier transform and so on. So in any case, the mathematical results are provided in a paper produced in the Journal of Mathematical Finance. So in any case, these are the some properties that we have in the story. And one we like, and this is another paper which was published in Finance and Stochastic, one property we like is the fact that doing so, we obtain a conditional expected quadratic variation for this compound process, which is stochastic. And this may be used today to look at variance swaps and all these new products which are traded in the market. Volatility indexes, and so on. So these are the mathematical computations. And just to go to the end of this representation, we decided to go to a database and to test three possibilities. So we compound a pure jump Levy process with this time change, and we see whether we do a good fit for the volatility surface. And we want to compare CGMY to the normal inverse Gaussian proposed by Professor Barndorf-Nielsen and the variance gamma model, which is a particular case of CGMY. Okay, so we do that on these specific dates and so on, and we find, and you can check that on your own, that what we call CGMY SV does a pretty good job in terms of mean pricing error over all these options. Okay, so when we are here, we may decide that it is fairly satisfactory. CGMY allowed us to calibrate the volatility smile for a given maturity, and adding a stochastic clock, we can go across maturities, okay, which is satisfactory. So now what? Now two things. Obviously, this process is not too easy to compute, and it takes some time just to go to exotic and so on, and coding and so forth. So I want to use the time which is left to discuss two things, my local Levy story, but also another model that you know, of course, which is a kind of mathematically less difficult, but that you may want to have in mind. And I guess some people are working on that today among practitioners and academics, but it is, and one of my PhD students is doing so, but this model goes some time into the past. It's the famous CEV model, which was first introduced by John Cox in 1975 and discussed again and enriched by Emmanuel and Mark Beck. Okay, so what is the story here? The story that you do have what we call stochastic vol, but we don't need to introduce stochastic volatility as an independent state variable, and consequently generate market incompleteness if you have, let's say, only the underlying stock, which is liquid. The minute you have a second source of risk, you generate market incompleteness. And you need to claim that you have all kinds of plain vanilla options in order to complete the market. So let me assume that I'm not necessarily in this situation. As you know, the CEV model that I write under this manner is going to create here stochastic vol at no cost, quote unquote, since I only have a Brownian motion in my story, I meaning John Cox in 1975. And the case which was studied by Cox in 1975 was a case alpha smaller than 1. Alpha smaller than 1, as you know, we have the so-called leverage effect in the stock market. When prices go down, the volatility goes up. And in order to have this feature in the CEV model, Cox imposed alpha to be smaller than 1. Later on, this condition was relaxed, but if you do want the so-called leverage effect, that's what you need. Okay, so the CEV process, so what do I want to say? Two things. I want to say that today, when you walk into a bank, you have all kinds of products, plain vanilla options, exotic options, and so on. But not only do you have that, but you have groups which are supposed to create hybrids, namely a mixture of underlyings, commodity plus FX, equity plus credit, and so forth. And obviously, when you are dealing with a hybrid, you are better off with a model which allows you to capture the features of the stock on one hand and the features of the equity world on the other hand. And as you know, in the case of the CEV model, the stock price may go to zero. So we used 25 years ago to be very happy about the geometric Brownian motion because it prevented the stock price from going to zero. Today, practitioners do like models where you have the possibility for the stock price to be positive or to go to zero. And that's why the CEV model is gaining in popularity. And what I just want to mention, and which is written probably somewhere else, but in particular in the work of Mark Atlan, my PhD student, we establish a number of relationships between the CEV model and Bessel processors, CIR process, and so on. So here I have a bunch of theorems where we explain how the CEV process may be related to Bessel processors, and knowing the Bessel processors from the founding authors, we can do a better job looking at the CEV model. So this is my first theorem, theorem number one, that you can read here, that the CEV can be represented as a power of the CIR process. And this is how it is obtained, and the proof is fairly elementary. So we have a second result, namely that in the case, so you remember Cox said alpha smaller than 1, you can see that we don't want alpha equal 1, that we know very well. We have known about it for more than 30 years, the geometric Brownian motion. So today, in practice, when you walk into an institution which is using this kind of model, alpha is sometimes smaller than 1, sometimes bigger than 1. So in any case, leaving aside alpha equal 1, we can have this representation. And again, if you spend some time working on this squared Bessel process, you derive a number of properties for XT. This was not done at the time of Cox and Emmanuel and Macbeth, but we can do that today because we have learned how to relate all these processes. We have a third property, a third theorem, and obviously this is going to be variable when we go into hybrids of credit and equity, namely that depending on the so-called dimension of the squared Bessel process, we have the three situations of how the process is going to behave with respect to zero. In one case, zero is an absorbing point. You may like it or not, depending on your view of the credit rate rating on the firm and so forth. In this situation, zero is reached. Almost surely, in this situation, you have instant reflection. And you may decide that you like this situation. So in any case, this is going to be quite helpful when we are looking at instruments putting together equity and credit. Okay, so this was a situation described for the squared Bessel process. On my previous page, I had a relationship between the CEV and the squared Bessel process, and consequently, these are the situations that we derive. And again, you may decide for the different names you are holding in your book of defaultable bonds, you may decide which alpha you like better. Okay, and lastly, let me finish briefly. In terms of plain vanilla option pricing, even though we do not have the Black-Scholes formula, we have something which is explicit, either as an infinite series or under another expression that you know in terms of chi function. Okay, so as I mentioned, Cox provided the case alpha smaller than 1. Emmanuel and Macbeth provided the case alpha bigger than 1. And today we are trying to put together these results with credit. Okay, so let me return to the title of my talk, namely local levy, and what is the story. So in principle, I had said, and in principle this is true, I had said that for a fixed maturity, our feeling was the fact that, for example, but obviously we are not the only ones to proposing some models, CGMY under the Q measure can do a good job. Okay, then we say we go to the volatility surface and we observe that this CGMY pure jump is not enough, and we need to do CGMY at a time change, which has some features. Okay, next, you talk to practitioners. Not only do they want the volatility surface, but now what they want as well, and this is particularly true in the world of commodity markets, okay, they also want options that you know, obviously, which are called forward start. So again, returning to my little place in Massachusetts, we know that in July, electricity prices will be very high. You know, so we may want as early as January to be traded. So this was January 105. We are concerned about prices during the period June to August. But we do not really care about what is happening here. So we may want to buy a forward start option. This is the lifetime of the option. And this is the date at which the strike will be fixed. It will be the price of the underlying on that day. Okay? And in the commodity market, but also in the equity market, these forward start options are becoming extremely liquid. And not only do we have the so-called standard forward start options, namely where the strike, so this is the maturity of my option, capital T, and this is a date T1, and as you know, in the forward start, the strike is going to be S of T1. Okay, so today we see trading on these forward start options, not only for a strike equal to ST1, but for a strike equal to 90% of ST1 or 110% of ST1. So we do have a number of strikes, and we do have a number of option prices, and we do have a smile looking forward, okay? And the smile, again, practitioners want to have a model which not only does the calibration for the standard smile for the volatility surface, but some of them are particularly interested in these forward start options and the corresponding smile. Okay, so here we have K, which is ST1, and we have the smile. So now what? Now we know that under the Q measure, assuming no dividend for the sake of argument, we know that the stock price grows at the rate little r, which is positive. So we are under the Q measure, and we know that the stock price grows in average at the rate little r, which is positive. Okay? First observation. Second observation, many brilliant people have observed the so-called leverage effect. Namely, when the stock price goes up, the volatility goes down. So now, when you put these two things together, in most models, what you are going to have some time down the road is that your volatilities are going to collapse. And not only are they going to collapse, but you are going to lose the so-called skew, which is the first subject of concern to practitioners, and that we have as well in the case of forward start options. So consequently, the idea of this paper on local levy was to be able to create for these forward start options the skewness, which is obviously not going to be provided by, for instance, the standard local volatility models. And this is the idea. Okay, so let me just go briefly. I have until 10:15. Yeah, okay. So Bruno Dupierre is going to be here, and you all know that. Dupierre, Dermann, Cani, following Ridden, Litzenberger, had the good idea to write the first so-called stochastic volatility model at a low cost, again, by demanding that sigma be a deterministic function of the underlying stock. And they were using all strikes and maturities available. And basically, as you know, they exhibited in particular this equation that you remember from Ridden and Litzenberger, and this possible expression of the core price, okay? So when we have the risk-neutral density of the stock price, we may relate it to the core, to the different calls with respect to strikes and maturities. So all this slide is a kind of familiar to you. And let me just mention a final thing regarding this so-called local volatility models, which is this, in principle, fundamental equation that is going to define, if it is true, the process ST. Okay. And here I mentioned the story of the forward skew. So now let me focus on this so-called forward skew. So I leave aside this local volatility models and I criticize my own work. Namely, I go to VG, which is a particular case of CGMY, with stochastic vol. So I go back to the point where I was, except that I take VG as opposed to CGMY, which is a simpler case. So I use this, I calibrate my parameters when I have classical options. Start day equals zero is here, my strike K is equal to whatever, let's say at the money value or whatever. So my skew is equal to 6.08, and we talk to practitioners and they feel fairly satisfied about this result. So I'm here, and so far, so good. But now I decide, obviously, so that's where I am for now. I use stochastic vol in VG in order to calibrate the volatility surface and these are S&P options, okay, on the given date, 13th of December or 1, whatever. We have a bunch of dates. It does not matter. So now my model being calibrated, I take some starting points in the future. So I go to forward start options and I take maturities T1, which are the ones which are observed in practice in the equity world and in the commodity world, namely every quarter. And now disaster. The skew is horrible. It is negative and okay, here it's a very low, 0.1286, it's minus 8 and so on. So in terms of forward start options, we are not doing well. So now we say that we would like to go back to our levy process and we would like to create skewness, which is going to be destroyed in standard local levy or even other models. We want to create skewness in the process itself, okay? So we want to have skewness generated by the choice of the levy measure we are going to choose. Okay, so let me just use the last few minutes to discuss that. Okay, by the way, my modest belief is that in terms of full answers to the volatility surface, we are not there yet. Some people think that to my view, that there is a lot of information that we know everything about a process when we know all options in price, in strikes and maturities, and it is not clear. So I don't have time to discuss this Guillon-Guy result. It's a kind of subtle, but I don't have the time for that. It will be another day. So in any case, this is our so-called local levy. So we had the jump compensator, so that's the choice. So the paper was published recently in Quantitative Finance. So in any case, we decide that we want to create the skewness but by what we call the speed function, and the speed function is defined in this equation. We go back to our levy process. This was a levy measure. This is a jump compensator, and we take it under this form. So we want to make sure that we are going to create some skewness in forward start options as well. And unfortunately, I'm running out of time. I just want to mention that in this quantitative finance paper, we exhibit an equation that you may find similar to the one which was produced in the papers on local volatility. Okay, namely here, except that we have some bad news. Obviously, the situation is mathematically more complicated. My little b is related to my little a. This is a quantity which matters to me. But this guy is not too simple. It is an object defined as the double tail of the levy measure. And our goal is to extract little b, namely little a. So just in order to leave time for questions, and not necessarily because he's a participant in this conference, we have some convolution going on here, as you see, when we try to extract this little b in order to obtain little a. It is not very simple in all cases. I do want to mention that in some cases we can do it well, and in particular, in a process which has been studied by Steve Koo, namely this one. Okay, there are at least these two papers I'm aware of, but maybe others, where the levy measure K is chosen under this form, and when we are in this situation, the double exponential tail, which was defined in my previous slide, is not too complicated, and we are able to resolve the convolution equation in order to derive our so-called speed function in order to obtain our so-called levy and provide some answer to these forward start options. And I will close here because it's 10:15.
Even get credit for the big jumps in the Steve Coase model?
I don't know, but in any case, it was a nice situation where we were able to solve the things fairly explicitly, so it was great.
Are there any questions? So the chairman reserves the right to ask one. In the CGM model with the random time change,
yes,
you showed the fit to the data, but is it robust? What happens out of sample?
Okay, there is a fair robustness of the parameters with respect to time, but in principle, we do not claim that we want to provide an answer for like a 6 months period. We say the following. We are working in a big firm. We have a book of plain vanilla options and exotics. We are in New York or London. We are not trying to make money with plain vanilla options. We are trying to make money on exotics. So on a given day, we are going to calibrate the model using the plain vanilla options, and we are going to quote, in principle, better prices for the exotics. And since everything is more or less explicit, we have also our hedging portfolio. We can compute the delta and gamma and vega and so on with a Fourier transform, which is a linear operation. Okay? So we have not conducted yet, to my best knowledge, a study where we go through a six-month database of volatility surfaces and see whether the parameters do not change, etc. Okay, so that's not the goal, that it was not the goal of the exercise. But this may be looked at. Yes?
I'm sorry, because the last slide you went through really fast.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
What is the intuition about how do you actually bring this forward speed? Where's the trick?
Okay, it's not a trick. It's really, okay, so two things. Two things I believe deeply, but obviously it's my own view. What I believe deeply first is that when we look at all these results on calibrating the volatility surface and so on, people tend, and among the different slides I went through very quickly, there is one I like very much, the so-called Dionghi. Basically, we don't know very much about a process when we know the marginals today. That's message number one. Okay. Message number two, we want to impose that skew is going to be created over time. So we have the process which is moving over time, and we want to make sure that the skew is hardwired in the process through the so-called speed function. That's the intuition. As it changes over time, it carries the skew with it, if I may say so.
Anything else? Thank you again, Elliot.